You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
It's your daily 10-minute business and finance news wrap for this Tuesday, the 21st of May 2024. The Australian share market fell today by 0.15%. The details with Joe Guser from Arius. But first to Telstra, which reaffirmed its full year 24 guidance, but surprisingly said it was removing its annual inflation-linked mobile plan prices. But what caught the general headline, though, was a planned reduction in its headcount by 2,800 jobs by the end of the year. Shares fell today by 2.7%. And to discuss all of that and Telstra's future, I spoke with Morningstar's Brian Han. So Brian, 2,800 jobs to go, that's a big number. Why is Telstra doing this?
Well, I think what people have to realise is that Telstra is in the midst of a continuous cost out program. I know they did T22, took a bunch of costs out, but they still have promised the market that there will be more costs to come out. So this is just the next stage of that whole journey. And when you think about it one level further down, we must appreciate the fact that there are legacy businesses within Telstra, such as those fixed line businesses where revenues are under structural and persistent pressure. So I think the time has come now to bite the bullet and readjust the cost base to respond to those structural revenue declines.
Do you think, though, it's something we'll see from other companies, these large-scale job losses? Because we know that a lot of people are predicting the unemployment rate to continue to rise, and we're starting to see signs of a little bit of a loosening in the labour market?
Well, I can't really speak for other industries and other companies, but what I can say is within the telecommunications sector, I think there will be more job cuts to come, simply because we are, as I said before, it's still in that transition phase whereby all of the telco companies are still grappling with what to do with their legacy businesses and how to recalibrate their cost base to reflect those revenue pressures. So I do believe, at least within the telecom sector, that these job cuts will continue.
Still, Telstra reaffirmed its full year guidance. It expects underlying EBITDA for the full year 25 of as much as $88.7 billion. So that's 8.7. And it removed the annual CPI linked to the review of prices for mobiles. It's potentially going to give it the ability to lift prices even higher. What's your take on all of that?
Yeah, I think you're shining perhaps the positive light on that little change, saying that there might be flexibility for them to maybe increase their prices even higher than inflation. I think what the market is focused on is that there will, or very unlikely to be, price rises this year. So I think that's how the market is looking at it. And then the market thinks further along and believes that, oh, wait a minute, is this in reflection of the competitive market? Is this in reflection of the fact that as Telstra raises prices, the other two competitors are not following? And therefore, Telstra is responding to that potentiality by keeping their prices competitive so that they can keep their subscriber growth momentum going. So there's the yin and the yang of that whole interpretation of that the price change decision. I think that's partly explains why the stock price is feeling a little bit of pressure today in response to the announcement.
So for a company like Telstra, where does the growth come from then in this environment?
Unfortunately, I believe the narrative has changed ever so subtly, because before today, I think there was a hope in the market that perhaps the revenue growth story can be rejuvenated, especially since the mobile business is going so well, that there are regular pricing increase mechanisms in place. After today, people are now questioning, oh no, now the Telstra growth story remains a cost out story. Now that's good and a bad. The good is in the fact that most of that is within Telstra's control, subject to union negotiations. But the bad side of that is the market has basically lost one revenue growth inbuilt growth dynamic in terms of that annual price review. So that's the sort of downside of today's announcement.
And so finally, wrapping everything up, what does this all mean for Telstra's outlook? And how can you explain, for example, its share price reaction, not just today, but over the past year when it's down around 18, 19%, I think, compared with the overall market, which has risen in that same time?
Yeah, I think there is a bit of a thematic movement going on in the market. Perhaps Telstra and the whole telco industry is seen as a ex-growth industry in a market where people are chasing growth that are sort of divorced from the underlying cost of living, you know, dynamics that are going on. And as you know, Telstra and everything else, you know, that is really hinges on the cost of living pressures that's on consumers. So that's one point. And the other point was, I think people are generally concerned that competitive environment in telco perhaps is, intensifying again, especially given, what Optus and its parent sort of looking for in terms of, you know, better profitability given the travails of past couple of years. And so there is a bit of a concern about the competitive intensity in the telco industry resurfacing.
That's Brian Hand there from Morningstar. And it's interesting, these job losses coming from Telstra, because it comes at a time where the consumer sentiment index from NAB remained in pessimistic territory, but respondents are also becoming a little less optimistic about the employment market when it has returned to long-run averages. To explain all of that and the implications for the economy, I spoke with Matthew Hassan. He's a senior economist at Westpac. How are consumers feeling about their jobs prospects? Because it's an interesting day for this Westpac Melbourne Institute Consumer Sentiment Index to come out, given Telstra's decision to sack 2,800 people.
Look, they're actually relatively comfortable about the jobs outlook. Our Westpac Melbourne Institute Unemployment Expectations Index is around about its long-run average, and that's quite a lot better than how consumers feel about everything else, where we're seeing this widespread pessimism overshadowing most of the consumer space at the moment. So around jobs, it's around about long-run averages. I'd say consumers aren't particularly fearful of job loss at the moment, although we have seen a little bit of a loss of confidence over the last two or three months. So far, they're still relatively comfortable about the situation around job prospects.
To what extent, though, is the unemployment rate set to rise, though? In other words, do you see more big corporate Australia cutting jobs? And what does that say about the economy overall? Because we are starting to see a little bit of that tightness coming out of the market, right?
Definitely. The labour market has softened. The last labour force report confirmed that pretty clearly. We do expect it to continue softening. The unemployment rate, we think, will rise towards 4.5% by the end of this year. But most of that reflects an easing in slack because of an improvement in labour supply. We will get some job losses along the way. That's inevitable, particularly in an economy where we've got lots of structural changes occurring. But we're not expecting to see a large round of widespread labour shedding over the next 12 months. When we look at business surveys, for example, what we're seeing is a very clear slowdown, but businesses in general look to be reluctant to let go of staff, given just how tight the labour market has been over the last 12 months, or longer than 12 months, really. And the difficulty of rehiring on the other side could be a major problem for capacity constraints and so on. But I think, you know, what we're seeing always with parts of the labour market is that you do get an ebb and flow. And I think with the Telstra layoffs, for example, there's probably a variety of factors playing into that. You know, we've seen offshore a significant round of labour shedding amongst the big tech stocks. And some of that is across the wider IT space that may be playing into the Telstra decisions as well. Some of that is the ebb and flow of the cycle of hiring and firing in that space. Some of it may also reflect higher interest rates over the last couple of years, which means for businesses that are running, you know, a cash flow negative, it's harder to wear those costs around labour forces that during a higher interest rate period. And there may be another factor that's starting to creep into this space, and that's the emergence of AI. We know the likes of ChatGPT has made it much easier for coders to draft code. And that's behind some of this rationalization we're seeing abroad. And it can now be used to use ChatGPT to draft code. And so for programmers, it's a matter of checking over its work rather than drafting something from scratch. That also may be a factor in these layoffs from Telstra. So there are always spaces in the economy where we are getting these technological changes and structural changes in activity. I suspect this might be part of the story this time around.
Okay. When we look at the broader consumer sentiment index, consumer pessimism is continuing, though. What exactly are they worried about and what does it say about the economy?
Look, it's still all about the cost of living and concerns that it will take longer to bring inflation back under control. Sentiment barely changed in the month of May, despite a relatively well-received budget by the looks of it. When we asked consumers specifically about budget measures, we saw a relatively balanced response in terms of how that was expected to impact their family finances. It's usually a pretty negative theme for households. This is the least negative we've seen in the last 14 years outside of those big stimulus budgets during COVID. So the budget itself looks to have gone over relatively well, but it has been a reminder of these inflation issues. It's eased some, managed to calm fears about inflation and interest rate rises a little bit, but it's coming from a very weak starting point. That March quarter inflation upside surprise has rattled the consumer, and they're now over half expect interest rates to rise again over the next 12 months, and they're bracing for a longer fight around inflation. And that's weighing very heavily on sentiment. The headline index for the month of May is still in the low 80s, you know, well below 100, deeply in pessimistic territory, and it's all about this inflation and cost of living theme.
So what does all of that then mean for interest rates, noting we heard from the RBA's board meeting minutes out today too?
Well, ironically, the weaker consumer sentiment stays, the less likely the RBA is going to be required to raise rates further. And there were some interesting aspects to this month's survey. We asked specifically about what consumers were planning to do with their stage three tax cuts coming through in July. And it looks like those that tax relief is going to be prioritised for savings. Only about 20 cents in the dollar is planned to be spent by consumers. Instead, the bulk of that is going to be put towards repairing their family finances, which have been under such pressure over the last couple of years. So for the RBA, that's an initial sign that the fiscal easing or the fiscal policy measures that are starting to come through are unlikely to really drive a spending spree from consumers. And so they'll be a little bit more comfortable that the demand side remains soft, helping them achieve their return to low inflation. Today's RBA minutes showed that the decision in May was a little bit closer than previous meetings. It came down to basically a judgment that it probably wasn't worth a move to fine-tune what is a bumpy and noisy inflation profile. In other words, they gave the economy the benefit of the doubt this time around. But I suspect if we get any more bad news around inflation, they'll be poised to move on rates. I think given this consumer backdrop, we're seeing ongoing weakness, that'll be a theme in the March quarter national accounts when it gets released. We think that the RBA will continue to sit tight on interest rates. But for consumers, it's still a long way before we sort of get out of this heavy cloud around cost of living and interest rate concerns.
It's Matthew Hassan there from Westpac.
Now, Market Day on the SBS On The Money podcast.
The Australian share market did fall today. It was close to those records yesterday, but today down 0.15%. The ASX 200, 7,851. For more, I spoke with Joe Youssef from Arius Asset Management. Joe, let's start with the RBA board meeting minutes out today. And in it, it really seems to be placing an each-way bet as to the potential for rate rises down the track or a rate cuts with no clear direction one way or the other. What's your take?
It's interesting. Look, I think, you know, whilst the markets, I think, prematurely have got ahead of themselves and started to factor in rate cuts, I think the Reserve Bank has been quite steadfast in articulating that whilst they're happy with the trajectory and momentum of inflation in the right direction, it's clear we're not out of the woods, and I certainly ascribe to that view. I've been advocating for quite some time that whilst we've done well to get inflation, you know, on the right path, and for the first time in a number of years, Ricardo, we've actually got positive real interest rates, which is important for the economy. We've got the cash rate above the inflation rate. But it's still too early, still premature to be factoring in interest rate cuts. I think we run the real risk that if we go too too aggressive and cutting too early, we repeat the errors of the past, and we start getting possibly inflation re-emerging, and that means rates higher for longer. So I'm of the view that there are people in the market that are calling rates as high as 5.1, but the market itself, the traders, I think, have factored in now. They've moved out their bets to April of next year for the first 25-point cut. So I still hold that hope that we'll be able to cut rates next year, definitely not this year in my view, and it wouldn't surprise me if they do raise rates in the intervening period.
So what's the relationship with interest rates then, right, and that gold price? I guess not just rates here in Australia, but in the US too, because gold continues to hit a record high. I think it's eased off that high today, but run us through why we're seeing this strong price at the moment.
Well, as we've discussed in previous interviews, I've been a long-term gold bull for a number of reasons. First and foremost, I think about 2 years ago, we had central banks globally divesting out of gold. And a lot of them have been clamoring back into to buy gold, and rightly so, to get their reserve levels up. We've been getting in recent times a lot of buying coming out of the Middle East and China. It's also broken some technical resistance levels, Ricardo, which is important. I think you get in the traders. There's a lot of excess cash or investment money that's lying latent on the sidelines, and people have been looking for momentum trades. And it hasn't just been gold. It's been base metals in particular, silver, platinum, nickel. They're all enjoying some pretty stellar runs at the moment. But and the other thing is, as you alluded to, it's the inflation head. It's the store of value. It's the store of wealth. With continued uncertainty, I mean, look at the states. The last two PPIs have surprised on the upside. So there's still evidence in the states. We've articulated and discussed many times, myself included, that they've got inflation via interest rates under control better than probably other jurisdictions around the world. And we were starting to look at possibility of cutting rates in the states, but they're still getting sticky inflation over there. So whilst that uncertainty about the interest rate forecast goes continues to prevail, you're going to get people gravitating towards gold. So I still think there's more upside for gold, and it's had a good run, but I'd be a buyer of any pullbacks.
And finally, markets have been reaching lofty heights in the US, and particularly here where we're just a whisker away from a record, although the market is down a little bit today. Do you think the market is stretched?
I've always, in the last probably best part of, or the majority of 2024, I've been cautiously optimistic. And that's been predicated on the fact that the earnings in the States, and to a slightly lesser extent in Australia, have actually been by and large quite positive. So as long as, and they're the fundamentals, the stock valuation inherently premised on what their earnings are and what their earnings forecasts are. But I read a report, Ricardo, a couple of days ago out of Europe. And for the first time in quite some time, European stock valuations are starting to look more attractive than the US, and that's starting to suggest possibly they are starting to look stressed. So I remain cautiously optimistic, but you'd want to ensure that earnings momentum continues. The one caveat there, I suppose, is I'm in the school of the soft landing, the Goldilocks theory. So, and even if you look at Chalmers in the budget and what he espoused in terms of growth, we're going to get GDP growth positive, but very tiny positive growth. So as long as that doesn't filter through and hit company earnings, then I remain cautiously optimistic on shares.
That's Joe Youssef there from ROS Asset Management.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.